convening. Lewis, we're going to start. We want also to thank the South African Reserve Bank's Ms. Shinaz Meer. She's the Assistant General Counsel for being with us today. She's actually later on the program this afternoon, but she's already here. So she kindly agreed that to do a presentation at this stage, and we really appreciate it because that will also assist us in terms of timekeeping. So thank you very much. Of course, the SA Reserve Bank is in terms of Section 223 of the Constitution, the Central Bank of the Republic, so it's quite important that we also get their input on this bill. Ms. Meer, welcome. I'm going to first give an opportunity just for the members to introduce themselves, and then we'll go over to you. Yes.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Angie Mulewati. I am a committee member. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jefferson. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Pindile Mola, a member of this portfolio committee. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Jerome Mage, a member of this committee.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. I'm Zakhele Mbele, member of the committee.
And I'm Diane Kolobana, also member of the committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll go to the Department of Police and the Civilian Secretariat and the Ministry just to get the details as well.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Brigadier Bats Navalt. I'm from the South African Police Service.
Morning, Chair. I'm Dawn Bell. I'm the Chief Director for Legislation in the Civilian Secretariat for Police and part of the drafting team of the critical infrastructure.
Morning, Chair and honorable members. My name is Milton Twana. I'm the Director for Legislation in the Civilian Secretariat for Police Service.
Morning, Chair. My name is Sisa Makabeni. I'm from the Chief State, Office of the Chief State Law Advisor.
Morning, Chair. My name is Chris Makobuti, IPPPRO.
Morning, Chair. My name is Thabo Kupa from the Office of the Minister.
Thank you very much for those introductions. Without further ado, thank you, Ms. Meer, and welcome.
Thank you very much for having me and having invited us to your Portfolio Committee on Police today. I think my presentation is really very brief. I'm sure you would have seen the submission that was sent through. Is that better? Okay, good. So we can start on slide one. This is basically to give you an idea of where the South African Reserve Bank fits in the financial regulatory architecture. If you look at the middle column, you'll see there's three departments within the South African Reserve Bank. One's focus is the National Payment System Department. The second one is the Financial Stability Department. And the third one is the Bank Supervision Department. The reason I'm outlining this in the whole scheme is to bring home the importance of financial stability and where it sits in the context of the critical information infrastructure bill, so we can understand why we're suggesting the amendments that we are suggesting for this particular bill. On the next slide, you'll see that the South African Reserve Bank has the primary responsibility for promoting financial stability. In fact, the Financial Stability Oversight Committee is tasked to maintain, protect, and enhance financial stability with the South African Reserve Bank. The South African Reserve Bank's main task is to oversee and maintain financial stability through exercising macroprudential supervision, performing prudential regulation and supervision, functioning as a crisis resolution authority. All of these tasks and obligations have come through a new piece of legislation that has gone through Parliament. It's now called the Financial Sector Regulation Act 9 of 2017. This act was assented to by the State President on the 22nd of August 2017, and it is to become effective in parts as determined by the Minister of Finance by notice in the Government Gazette. I shall outline the objective of the Financial Sector Regulation Act, so we can see the focus on stability, which needs to come through the critical infrastructure bill as well. So Section 7 outlines the object of the Act is to achieve a stable financial system that works in the interest of financial customers and supports balanced and sustainable economic growth in South Africa by establishing regulatory and supervisory frameworks that promote, in terms of sector laws, financial stability, amongst other frameworks. I've highlighted financial stability again in the slide just to bring everyone's mind on board in relation to it. So our submission is pretty short. If we go to the heading and section number, section 12 in particular, we propose that new wording be added to emphasize the importance of financial stability with the critical infrastructure bill. And the clause we've suggested is section 12.9, notwithstanding the provisions of subsection 1 and 2, the National Commissioner must, in exercising any function contemplated under section 9.2 and 9.3, consult with the South African Reserve Bank in matters that may affect financial stability. As we all know, financial stability is critical for the country's economy, and it's inherent in the functioning of SARB to protect and enhance financial stability. It is therefore imperative that the SARB is consulted with on matters affecting financial stability. In this context, we have proposed that to the extent that Section 9.2 and Section 9.3 of this bill affects financial stability of the Republic, the National Commissioner must consult with SARB. In fact, Section 9.1c of the Critical Information Infrastructure Bill enjoins the National Commissioner to effect cooperation between the South African Police and other organs of state insofar as it relates to the protection of critical infrastructure. This cooperation under Section 9 we see well aligned with the requirements of Section 11.2c of the Financial Sector Regulation Act, in terms of which the SARB is obliged to have regard to roles and functions of other organs of state exercising powers that affect aspects of the economy. This proposed wording will strengthen the cooperation between the relevant parties in ensuring that adequate and effective consultation takes place in matters affecting financial stability. So that was our submission. It was merely an amendment to one clause, but just intertwining the two pieces of legislation so they did well, and the cooperation then emerges as an important component of the cooperative relationship between organs of state.
Thank you very much, Ms. Muir. I think it's a very constructive presentation and proposal. I think it's also in line with what Nicolette said in her introduction, the question of cooperation between different spheres. So that's quite important. So members, I'm going to give an opportunity for further questions or clarification from the members in terms of the input from Ms. Meer. Over to the members. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to clarify one thing, whom are we referring to when we say financial customers? And the second question would be, as the bill is now, does the Reserve Bank foresee any complications if that clause is not amended, and what complications might they be, if I was to ask? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Molebatsi.
Thank you, Chairperson. On section 9.3, where it speaks of the consultation, the National Commissioner must consult with SRB. In your view, what must happen in this consultation? Must it be a form of taking cue from what you want to see happening? What type of consultation do you envisage? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Molebatsi. Honourable Bailey, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My understanding is that the proposed amendments from the Reserve Bank is simply around ensuring explicit requirements for consultation with the Reserve Bank in the declaration processes. There was a previous proposed version of a bill dealing with these matters, which, as the Commission will recall, was the private members bill tabled in my name. And in that private members bill, the approach had been for an expert in the financial services sector to actually be represented on the board itself. Of course, in that framework, the infrastructure board itself actually made the declarations, but that's a separate matter for down the line. I'm just curious to know whether I've forgotten the surnames. It's Mia. Ms. Mia, has any opinion as to whether consultation in the processes versus inclusion in the actual body or structure would have any substantive difference in how you see the perspective of the Reserve Bank being taken on board in a meaningful way? Thanks, Chair.
Bailey, members, is that the questions? Thank you very much. Thank you, Ms. Mia. Thank you.
Okay, so I'll try and go through the questions as I've captured them. The first question is, who are we referring to when we refer to financial customer? So I'll just take you through the definition of financial customer. The Financial Sector Regulation Act defines a financial customer, and I'm using this act because it was in this context that we introduced the section in the submission. It means a person to or for whom a financial product, a financial instrument, a financial service, or the service provided by a market infrastructure is offered or provided in whatever capacity and includes a successor entitled of that person and the beneficiary of the product, instrument, or service. So it's a very wide definition. Okay. The second question, if the chair can just help me on that, I've just written a note on complications. If you could just help me with the question on that. What should happen? My bad handwriting, I'm sorry. What should happen during the consultation? Is that the second question? Okay. From Molly Busby. Okay, so the idea around the consultation is really to ensure that financial stability matters which affect the economy are taken on board. So it's very hard at the outset to say what are the factors that should be taken into consideration in the consultation, but it's open and transparent consultation taking all factors into account, mainly with the focus of financial stability as being one of the components thought about, is what we would like to see in that consultation process. And if you actually look at section, I think it's section 16, it also talks to the power of the minister to declare critical infrastructure and determine a critical infrastructure complex. When considering any application, the minister himself needs to have regard to the functioning or stability for the economy in the Republic. And if that is the factors to be taken into account in the application which the minister must have regard to, consultation must embody this process as well. The next question. Is there any opinion that consultation in the process versus inclusion would have any substantial difference in a meaningful way? So is there any opinion that consultation versus inclusion on a set structure? I think that's what we were talking about. So of this, I was of two minds, because if you set in the structure, for example, if you're sitting on the council, there may be many times where you sit on the council, and because of the wide nature of this bill and the wide parties that may be affected on this bill, it seems to me unnecessary for the South African Reserve Bank to be a member of the council, for example, in matters where the financial stability are not going to be discussed or there's no impact. But it would make sense for a member of SARB to sit on the council where there are issues of financial stability to be discussed. When I looked at the section, I also looked at section, I just want to get it, I think it's section 9, which referred to heads of government. It's section 4.4. So section 4.3 sets out who would be appointed as members of the council. Section 4.4 went ahead and spoke about the minister may request the head of a government department to designate an appropriately qualified official or any other person. If you look at the definition of head of government, it doesn't necessarily cover the South African Reserve Bank because we are classified as an organ of state. So it means that ordinarily we would not have access to this council. And if we think about it, maybe a suggestion going forward to sit on the council where financial stability issues are discussed in particular, it might be the correct approach to have South African Reserve Bank sitting on this council specifically when financial stability matters are discussed. And that would be my submission for that question. Let me see if I've missed any other questions. Okay, I've answered that. The complication, I think we've missed one question talking about what are the complications if the clause is not amended as is. And the complication I see is if we lose sight of financial stability by not getting the right stakeholders at the table when these critical matters are discussed, there might not be synergy and organs of state and heads of departments and government departments may not work cohesively. And at the end, even if you look at the Financial Sector Regulation Act, which came through, a big message as a result of the global financial crisis is why we have created the Financial Sector Regulation Act. And that whole act speaks to cooperation and synergy and departments speaking to each other, which would ultimately result in a better South Africa with more government agencies and private sector talking in the right way to get the right message across and the right effect for the economy. And I think that's why we've suggested what we have suggested in the submission.
Ms. Beer, I just saw two follow-ups. Honourable Molobatsi and Honourable Mauke. Thank you. That order.
Thank you. In these consultations with yourself and the National Commission, if some things do not meet your expectations, What will happen? Thank you.
Honourable Markey.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe I'm a bit slow in getting to the point that I would like to get to. And maybe the best thing would be to give me an example or say this happened and the Reserve Bank would be compromised or the financial stability would be compromised in this way and that way. Maybe that would make me understand, because as I see the functions of the Reserve Bank and in my head I'm thinking about critical infrastructure, and we are not talking cybercrime is some act altogether, not this one. So I'm taking time to focus exactly on what type of things can compromise the financial stability, especially because in your amendment, you're not actually saying the National Commissioner may. You're actually saying must consult. So if I can get an indication by way of an example, maybe I'll be able to understand it fully. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, members. Ms. Meir, you're welcome to respond.
So I'm just trying to think of a nice way to explain financial stability. Do you think it would help if I start with that? So the way we describe financial stability, we don't describe it as an end in itself. We describe it similarly to price stability, which is an important precondition for sustainable economic growth, development, and employment creation. And I take this from the Financial Stability Review, which has been published by the South African Reserve Bank. So we can see that the effect of monitoring, protecting, and enhancing financial stability has this impact on society, economic growth, development, and employment creation as well. So if whatever process happens through the critical infrastructure bill, that may have an effect on financial stability. And it's very hard to now come to actually create an example now of where there's actually going to be a complete impact, because there are various factors that you need to consider in determining a critical infrastructure or critical infrastructure complex. So if this happens to, for example, and I don't want to go into naming of a critical infrastructure or a critical infrastructure complex, but if in that decision or in that declaration, there are a number of processes envisaged in the bill that may have an effect on any kind of institution. If that has a ripple effect on financial stability, that's where the Reserve Bank has an interest in the matter. Okay, so that was the first one. Your second question was revolved around the Reserve Bank and what happens if financial stability is compromised. And I think the way I've answered it from my previous explanation, where I spoke about the economy, job prospects, the development of a country, it would illustrate what the result of the compromise would be. The second question was, in the actual consultation process, if something do not meet our expectation, what will happen? I think that also goes to what I've said before. If consultation is honest, true, transparent, if correct consultation happens, the correct collaboration will happen, and the correct result will happen. And I think the end result is not to improve and create a better society.
Thank you very much, Ms. Meir. Members, or did I see a hand, Mr. Markey?
I think Chairperson, I'm getting more confused in the answers. Maybe let me just ask another question. If we take out the must and say may, would that still be fine?
The effect would be different, mainly the must is there because we want the consultation in matters that affect financial stability. If you have it as a may, it allows the National Commissioner a discretion in consulting with the South African Reserve Bank in matters that affect financial stability. Being the Reserve Bank, having the mandate of financial stability, we would like the may not to be a may, but we would like it to be a must.
Ms. Meir,
thank you.
Members, are everybody satisfied? Thank you very much, Ms. Meir, for your participation in this process. Is there anything you want to add?
No, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. We will, of course, consider your input, and you're also welcome to stay if you want to. You're welcome. Thank you very much, members. We will move now to the next presentation, the Gautrain Management Agency. If they can just come to the fore.
Could I ask in the meanwhile a point of clarity, not on the finance, on something completely different that struck me while we've all been having the conversation? The members of the council are on that council for a four-year period. Now, as far as I recall, members of boards, members contracts for employees, everything seems to be 5 years these days. So I wasn't sure if it's a standard for councils being 4 years, in that the finding of these people is extremely, I mean, it's a long, onerous process, and having to get clearance, you know, that can take at least a year if that's. I just wondered why a five-year period was not considered. And there also seems to be no mention of what if there's a decision by the council that they wish a person to do a second term. I've been through it a few times, maybe I'm missing it. So maybe we can discuss that when we're...
I think that is two issues we must flag for the department and the civilian secretariat when they come back on Tuesday.
Yeah.
That we get.
If they could just flag that and give answers to that thought, because it's not covered.
Yeah.
And sometimes in other areas you allow them an X year break and then they can come back for another term. So there's all of that.
Yeah.
It's just nothing.
Yeah. No, we will definitely take that up on Tuesday. Thank you, honourable member. Thank you, Ms. Mayor. We appreciate it. We will then ask the Gautrain Management Agency to come forward. And then we will start with the presentation. Thank you very much. Good morning, welcome to the delegation from the Gautrain Management Agency. I'm just going to allow again the members to introduce themselves. I don't know who you are present when they introduce themselves. Thank you.
Dumelang bagaetsho, leina la ka ke nna NG Molewatsi, ke leloko la committee. Ka leboga.
Good morning, I'm Jerome Marke, a member of this committee.
Thank you, Chair. Zakele Mbele, member of the committee.
And I'm Diane Kohler-Barnard, also a member of the committee.
So you're welcome to introduce your delegation and then proceed with the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, but in the interim, let me introduce, you know, the team. My name is Nteri Mawai. I'm the Senior Executive Manager for Gautrain Management Agency. And we have been mandated to be here by our CEO, Jack van der Merwe. He tendered his apology. With me is my colleague, Mpumi Zuza. She's the Executive Manager for Compliance, also with Gautrain Management Agency.
Thank you very much, sir. Both of you are very much welcome, and we appreciate your participation. Plan B, the hard copy was made available to members, so it's in front of them. So I think, meanwhile, while Dr. Kinnis, we can proceed maybe with the hard copy presentation. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The agenda is as stated on the first page. First, we'll give a high-level overview of the structure of the Gautrain public-private partnership. There it is, you know, for those who don't have a hard copy. The overview, as I've indicated, will be in relation to the PPP structure of Gautrain, and will also deal with the implications, practically, of the critical infrastructure protection bill in relation to Gautrain as a public-private partnership. And we'll then consider giving some solutions that are suggested, and we'll be able to deliberate on the proposals that we are making. Okay, with regard to the high-level overview, I think it will be advisable for us to contextualize our proposal by giving you a structure of the Gautrain public-private partnership. There are about five critical entities that are playing a pivotal role with regard to the Gautrain PPP. First, we'll have the Gautrain Provincial Administration, which is the owner and the funder of the Gautrain system. And it is the public partner in relation to the concession agreement that has been concluded with the second party, which we call the concessionaire, and that is Bombela Concession Company. It has been appointed in particular to design, construct, operate, maintain, and partially finance the Gautrain project. And the GMA, which we call the Gautrain Management Agency, has been appointed in terms of the GMA Act, the Gautrain Management Agency Act of 2006, to be responsible for, among others, managing the concession agreement that has been entered into between the concessionaire and BCC. I'll use the word concessionaire and BCC interchangeably. The concession agreement has been entered into, and the GMA has been appointed in terms of that act to be responsible for administering the relationship between the province and the concessionaire, and to act on behalf of the province, and to ensure that all the assets that form part of the Gautrain project are protected, preserved, and maintained, and over and above that, to perform all the rights and exercise the functions that may be bestowed upon the province. The fourth party in the structure of the Gautrain PPP will be Bombela Operating Company. We have to distinguish between Bombela Concession Company, which is the concessionaire, and Bombela Operating Company. Bombela Operating Company has been subcontracted by BCC, the concessionaire, to operate and maintain the Gautrain system. And in turn, BOC, which is the operator, then entered into another contract with Mega Express to be responsible for the dedicated feeder and distribution services. We refer to that as a bus shuttle service. And those are all the parties that are playing a key role in the Gautrain system. And this will become important as and when we deal with the issues that we have raised in relation to the bill. And let me then move on to deal with the implications of the bill in relation to the Gautrain public-private partnership. First, when you look at the definition of a person in control of a critical infrastructure, it relates, among others, to the owner of a Gautrain system, which will be the Gauteng provincial government. Then it further deals with any person who occupies, possesses, or is in control of, or is responsible for the operation or administration of the critical infrastructure, or the head of any organ of state who occupies, possesses, is in control of, or is responsible for the operation or administration of a critical infrastructure. When you look at that definition in particular, it touches on all those five entities that I've dealt with. First, the Gauteng province is the owner of the system, and by virtue of that definition, they will then be the person who will be in control of a critical infrastructure. Similarly, the GMA, which is an agency of the provincial government, is responsible for oversight and management, which is the administration of the Gautrain system in respect of the GMA Act, which effectively means that either the owner or the agent could be responsible for controlling the infrastructure on behalf of the province. Similarly, BCC, which is the concessionaire, is in possession and is in control of the system through the concession agreement. And by virtue of that, they could be then be regarded as the person in control of future infrastructure. Similarly, BOC, which is the operator, is responsible for administering and operating the system. And Mega Express also has been bestowed with the responsibility of managing the bus system in particular. And you will see all those five entities will play some role. Then the problem arises when you look at the relevant sections, in particular section 24 and 25 of the bill. When you look at the bill, you realize that there are certain functions that are bestowed upon the various entities, in particular the person in control of the critical infrastructure. And when that happens, in particular in relation to applying for the critical infrastructure to be declared as such, any of those entities could submit an application. And the concern will be, if we as the government, and being the owner of the infrastructure, were to be told some other day that, by the way, BCC or BOC has submitted an application for your infrastructure, the Gautrain system, to be declared a critical infrastructure, we'll be extremely worried, because there are a whole lot of ramifications and onerous obligations that are attached to it. And we would have wanted a situation where there is clarity with regards to the issue of the owner or a person who occupies or is in control of that. Because the concern, Chair, that we have in relation to this is, if any of these parties were to make that application, remember we have entered into this PPP project with the concessionaire and we've paid almost more than 25 billion rand for this. And the risk has been transferred to the concession. And all of a sudden, if any other burden were to be imposed on us, we will be encountering challenges in ensuring that the purpose of the bill is being realized. And we want to ensure that there is clarity with regard to that. And primarily because that could be done without any consultation with any of the parties who are responsible for administering and or controlling the infrastructure in question. And we have also observed that similarly with regard to a tenant, the landlord could be told one day that the tenant has submitted an application for the infrastructure to be declared as a critical one. And we believe that if we were to come up with some solution, it could help. And I'll then move over to the recommended solution. The proposal, therefore, is that with regard to clause 24, that clause 9 be added onto it. And we have actually included the proposed provision in relation to that for ease of reference. And it will read as follows. To the extent that a concession agreement or similar arrangement exists in respect of critical infrastructure, the concessionaire or its equivalent shall be responsible for the discharge of the responsibilities prescribed in this section and section 25. This will help to ameliorate the challenge of knowing who in particular has to shoulder the responsibility of complying with the obligations as contained in section 24 and 25 of the bill. Because the Critical Infrastructure Council will know who to deal with as and when they enforce the bill itself, including the commissioner. And therefore, this will be the proposal, and we believe it will go a long way in addressing that particular challenge. Moreover, we also are suggesting that another proviso be added at the end of clause 18.1 of the bill, which will be to the effect that an application for declaration of infrastructure that is subject to public partnership may only be lodged by an organ of state, which is the owner thereof, or is in control of, or is responsible for administration of that infrastructure. And therefore, in that regard, we are proposing the following, that at the end of Section 18.1, the following proviso be added. I'll read the whole of it. A person in control of an infrastructure may, in the prescribed manner and format, lodge with the National Commissioner an application contemplated in Section 16.1 to have such infrastructure declared as critical infrastructure, provided that in case of infrastructure in respect of which a concession agreement or similar arrangement exists, only the head of an organ of state that owns, is in control of, or is responsible for the administration of infrastructure may lodge such an application. I think this similar proviso will help in instances where you've got a landlord and a tenant. And that, in a nutshell, Chair, is our brief submission, and I think I will pause here to engage members. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your input and presentation. Let's go to the members. Honourable Kola Bana.
Chair, if I may ask through you, what is the status? And I'm been thinking back and trying to recall the original list that was finally declared under the National Key Points Act. Has that act involved the Caltrain at all? Was it declared a national key point? If it was, I understand your concerns. However, I don't recall that it was. If it was not, what have you been told and by whom that you are fearing this? I do understand you're trying to protect, and quite rightly so, belts and braces to protect at 25 billion rand expense, just in case someone else decides that they'll sweep it under their, make it their mandate. But what has given you this feeling that they may well declare a train to be a national key point?
We'll take a few other questions. Honourable Molabachi, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. You are not at ease with this concession. Am I right? But my question is, what will put you at ease with this concession? Thanks, Chair.
Any other members? Thank you. Honourable Markey.
Thank you, Chairperson. The recommendation 18, I think that is. I can understand that because it's sort of generic. It covers everybody. Doesn't refer to the Gautrain only. So it makes sense to me. Wouldn't that one only be enough? Wouldn't it even be covering the other suggestion if you only use that one? Because I still have a problem with concessionaire and whatever. But is it not covered? If you use this as the only amendment, if I understand it correctly, it covers everything. I've got the feeling that this might be referring specifically in some way to Gautrain. Thank you, Chairperson.
Maybe just a word of welcome to Mr. Philip Mshlungu. Welcome, sir. Good to see you. Compliments on the season. Honourable Bailey.
Thanks, Chair. I think it's more of a comment because I don't quite have a clearly formulated question at this point, but it flows from what Honourable Markey was saying, which is that the one aspect that makes me a little bit uncomfortable is around crafting laws with specifics in mind as opposed to laws of general application. So I'm just wondering if there's any other scenarios similar to this, where we're talking a public-private partnership or a concession framework that would fall under similar or have similar requirements, and then in that way we know that at least we've covered that aspect. That's all I have for now.
Thank you very much, members. Sir, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Starting with the first question from Honorable Barnett, whether the Gautrain is declared as such under the national key point. The current status is that we are not declared as such, but however, at some stage, this was contemplated, and they did some groundwork to establish whether or not the Gautrain system couldn't be declared as a national key point. And there were a number of challenges that were experienced because they thought it would slow down the Gautrain system as it is. As you may know, we are a rapid rail link system of some sort, and in some way, if it were to be detected at a key point, we may be detrimentally affected. But however, that idea is still on the cards, and we are a bit concerned that if it were to move in that direction, the concerns will still remain, you know, as they are. And the reason why we are of the view that we may be considered a critical infrastructure is because when you look at the requirements or the prerequisites for declaring it as such, we fall squarely within that, where the economy could be interrupted, among others, and all that. And that's the reason why we found it advisable that we should consider submitting these comments for consideration by the committee. I will then continue to deal with the second question that came from Ms. Molevat in relation to us being not at ease with the concession. We don't have a challenge as such with the concessionaire, but however, we believe that the concessionaire has been appointed for a period of 16 years to run the system, and we have mandated them in terms of the concession agreement, and we have paid for them to run with the system and be responsible for all the functions in relation to the system. And the concern we are having is, if we were to have this bill as is, and some obligations were to be bestowed on us, and when I say us, I'm referring to other government entities that may having a concession. You talk of SANRAL with regard to the roads. It could be the correctional services centers that are all over the place. If you've got somebody who is running it and you are not, to some extent, when you look at the bill itself, because you are a person in control of it, you will be having certain obligations that you have to perform. And that in some way will interfere with the efficacy of the concession agreement. And that's the reason why we are not necessarily having challenges with the concessionaire as such. But however, we are foreseeing some potential pitfalls in future if we were to leave it as it is. Coming back to the concern that has been raised by Honorable Marke, am I correct? Yeah, which deals with the recommendation under 18.1. If you look at 18.1 in particular, we are proposing that only the head of an organ of state be responsible for submitting an application. And that is only in relation to submitting an application. Whereas the one under 24.9 deals with the entity that will be responsible for performing the function. And as I've sketched the scenario of the concession agreement we have, you take Gautrain, you have got Bombela Concession Company, which is responsible for running with the system together with its subcontractors. And if you look at the proposal we are having, we are making it easier for the act to be administered so that as and when there are certain duties to be performed by any entity, the Critical Infrastructure Council will know and the Commissioner will know who in particular has to deal with it, as opposed to having all those five entities. The scenario may be different with other entities, but I want to believe that if you go to SANRAL, SANRAL will have somebody running with his concession on the roads. Similarly, Correctional Services will have a similar challenge, where if you go to them or leave the bill as it is, and you want to know who in particular has to perform these functions on a particular critical infrastructure that has been declared as such, you'll run into trouble. Clause 24.9 will make it easier to know who has... It only applies in instances where you have somebody performing a function on behalf of an entity that owns it in particular. And it makes it easier because more often than not, in matters of this nature, those functions will be transferred to another entity like the concessionaire in this instance. The last issue. I'm not certain if I've tackled all of them. I seem to have, you know, exhausted them. Okay. A scenario from Honorable Mbele, I think, you know. I think I've dealt with it. I've dealt with it, you know, in my response. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much, sir, for your responses. Members, is that the questions, the responses? Thank you very much. Sir, do you've got anything else to add you want to bring under the attention of the committee?
I'm sorry, Chair, you know, I'm not used to this. If you look at the submission that you have made, there is another proposal that you have submitted in relation to, I think, Section 26, which deals with the minimum and maximum penalties. When you look at the bill itself, it only deals with maximum penalties of up to 30 years or so, if my recollection serves me well. But it doesn't deal with the minimum penalties. And what will happen is you may consider having minimum penalties as well so that, you know, you guide the cause and whoever will be dealing with any contraventions of the Act once if it gets, you know, promulgated.
Thank you very much. That's a very valuable comment, and we'll take that into consideration. Thank you very much, sir. I just want to check, is the National Energy Regulator here? Not yet. So we'll continue with the Banking Association of South Africa. Thank you very much. Thank you, sir. Thank you very much, members. We're going to continue. A word of welcome to the Banking Association of South Africa, and also thank you for coming in earlier than you originally slotted. We really appreciate it. We can see you from the private sector. You want to move things. Right. We're going to give an opportunity for you just to introduce your delegation, and then we'll continue with the presentation. Thank you.
It's still morning. Good morning, Chairperson and members on top of the Portfolio Committee on Police. Thank you for giving us this opportunity to present before you. My name is Raksha Semnarayan. I head up the Market Conduct Division of the Banking Association. I'm supported by Ayanda Bayepi and by Vishal of Ethico. Okay. BASA, or the Banking Association of South Africa, is the industry association that is mandated to represent the banking sector on regulatory and other issues. So we're the voice of the banking sector. Firstly, before I could proceed, I would like to say that we're very grateful to the department for indulging and for having a very intense consultation process where we were consulted extensively before the bill reached Parliament. Therefore, BASA supports the tenor of the bill, which is aimed at ensuring that South Africa maintains a robust and sustainable approach to the protection of South Africa's critical infrastructure in the interests of state and all citizens. BASA further supports Two and three.
I think the slide that's missing, bars are further support for mechanism.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
The slide is missing,
okay.
But we've got the hard copy.
FAFSA further supports the mechanisms in the bill to promote a spirit of cooperation between various role players in order to provide a multidisciplinary approach to deal with critical infrastructure protection, and this we believe is important for the national interest. FAFSA supports the bill in general, as I've mentioned. The bill does not explicitly include banks as they fall outside the definition of basic public service, and that was dealt with in the consultation process. But if you look at the mechanisms or provisions of the bill, banks can be declared critical infrastructure by the Minister of Police if the Commissioner makes an application for such in terms of Clause 16 of the bill. We caught the tail end of the STAR presentation, and I think they dealt with that. So our submission is in support of what the STAR has said and similar, where we're saying that the Minister may have the authority to declare the infrastructure of key banks as critical infrastructure, and this would include branches, ATMs, data centers, amongst others, because it's the broad banking system. This, we believe, would be over and above the elements that fall under the scope of the Cyber Crimes and Cyber Security Bill. We therefore propose, and it's a similar proposal to that of the SARB, caught the tail end of what the SARB did, that if the Minister declares a financial institution as defined in the Financial Sector Regulation Act 9 of 2017, the FSR Act, a critical infrastructure, it should be done in consultation with the Financial Stability Oversight Committee as defined in the FSR Act, because that's in the national interest, and as we understand, and I think the SARB alluded to that, financial instability is important, and if we have one bank that's affected or declared a national infrastructure, it could have a ripple effect on the whole system. So we're saying the power may be necessary, but it must be done in consultation with that, with the SARB. Subsection 4A states that in the event that the infrastructure referred to in an application partly consists of any possible critical information infrastructure, the National Commission must, before making any recommendations, refer the application to the Cyber Response Committee. I think one of the versions, clause 53, also sets out that the SARB is also a member of the Cyber Response Committee. This consultation process provides assurance that banking industry supervisory bodies will be consulted with respect to cyber matters. And that's our primary point in the interest of national stability and to protect the financial system. We hope that our comments are positively considered. Thank you for the opportunity. I'm happy to take questions.
Thank you very much for your presentation, members. We will give them an opportunity for further interaction and comment from members on the presentation. Thank you. Mbele.
Thanks, Chair. Again, I think it's probably just a bit more of a comment than a question, because it's along the same lines as what the SA Reserve Bank presented. Because while the bill makes provision for the inclusion of relevant stakeholders in specific applications, sort of mainly under Section 12, referring to the formation of ad hoc or standing committees to assist the National Commissioner, I have a concern that the general trend of SAFS management when it comes to consulting stakeholders in certain instances, and I think the firearms control environment has been the most glaring example, where consultation is either not effective, not substantive, or things go the wrong way in spite of consultation. And so I think it is important that we look at how the structural sort of framework that the bill sets up really do impress upon the need for the SAPs to take the inputs on board from stakeholders substantively. Because if the declaration of critical infrastructure is done in a way that does not take on board, say, comments from the Banking Association, and then there are issues in the implementation of that down the line, then you end up really in the kind of mess that we are seeing in the firearms control environments, where it just becomes very messy and complicated. So I think it's really just about flagging. I did like the suggestion made during the Saab slots, and I've made a note here that it's about Section 4, Subsection 4, adding any other organ of states under government departments. At least they're more easily included because they are part of the public sector, broadly speaking. But I think when it comes to private sector stakeholders, that does need a more concrete inbuilt channel in that way, which, not to be churlish, I will say was included under my private members bill. But anyway.
Honourable Kolobana, thank you.
Yeah, I think one has to go back and look very carefully at the proposed members of the council. There is no department included that refers to finance or trade and industry. And it seems to me those would be the major entities that would understand the issues by yourselves, by banks, finance, etc., all the way through. And they're simply not considered. While they do say that one of the five somewhere, it says something about being a lawyer, but I don't know that there should not be major consideration to the actual people who would deal with the workings of these actual entities. I have no idea why the Department of Communications is there, if only maybe to organize the release of a press release. I don't know why, although maybe we're talking because of the SABC and other entities like that, and defense, etc., but nothing at all that will be relevant to our major earners in the country. You certainly can't declare a bank and all its entities some sort of critical infrastructure. Now, next thing, some teenager taking a picture outside an ATM and he goes to jail for what, 500 years or whatever these draconian terms are. I mean, it's too bizarre for words. So, you know, we don't want to become a major police state. It's for protection of entities. But I don't think that's been given consideration at all. I think back to the drawing board on that one.
Thank you, Honourable Kola Barnard. Honourable Mshlongu, thank you.
I would like to have clarity whether are we talking about banks in general, according to the association, which to me will be very problematic and also impossible even to manage on the side of the state, or are we focusing on South African Reserve Bank as a central bank, which I think has got a regulatory authority over the banks in the country, which has got also a direct link to the state. If I can be clarified on that, sure.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mshlongu. Members, is that the questions or comments? Thank you very much. Over to you. Thank you.
We support the sentiments for consultation and taking cognizance of consulting with National Treasury and the Reserve Bank, which the Treasury sets out the policy for the financial sector and the Reserve Bank regulates, and the Prudential Authority. Reserve Bank is responsible for financial stability, and the Prudential Authority is responsible for the regulation of financial institutions, for them to be consulted, especially if there is a need to declare a financial institution as a critical infrastructure. Clarity on the last point is that we're talking about if the power is exercised to declare banks as financial institutions as a critical infrastructure, and what we're saying is that the Reserve Bank then should be consulted if banks are brought under that purview, because they are the regulatory authority responsible for financial stability, and the Prudential Authority, which falls under the Saab, is responsible for regulation of specific financial institutions.
Any other questions for clarity? Thank you, members. Yes, Honourable Kolobana.
Same question I had to our Gauteng train man.
are banks, I'm guessing the Reserve Bank is currently a national key point. I can't remember, but I'm presuming it is. But at this stage, there's no other banking entity that is considered to be a national key point. So you, again, are trying to stay ahead of the wave, and prevention is always better than cure. So that's the status of your presentation. Yeah.
Honourable Member?
Thank you. That's correct. We're saying if that power is exercised where banks could be included, then the Reserve Bank should be included.
Yes.
I think the it would be very difficult to sit and say this is the critical infrastructure bill which must not which must exclude this one and that one. And you can't do that because there's always going to be something left out. But that, I presume, would be dealt with by the regulations and the definition of what it must include. But, of course, banks are critical to the economy. Now what? So this is a very thin tightrope that's being walked right now. And giving sweeping powers to someone to simply say, that's got to be so, we could end up with egg all over our faces. So slowly on this one.
So I think that's within consultations where the SRB is so critical. Is Reserve Bank, you want to come in, Ms. Mia, on this issue? You're welcome.
Absolutely, and I think the opportunity now where more consideration must go to who sits on that council in respect of financial stability is critical for the way the way this bill is carved going forward.
Thank you very much. Members, anything else? Then anything else from the Banking Association you want to put on record?
Thank you for the opportunity. Okay.
Thank you very much then for your presentation, and thank you for coming. We appreciate it very much. I just want to get the indication whether the National Energy Regulator is here. Not yet. Greenpeace. Greenpeace got a quite substantial presentation. So I think let's start with that. Even if we take a tea break at 12, you're welcome, sir. Well, thank you once again. Thank you, members. I think we're making very good progress. Let's give an opportunity for the members to introduce themselves before we give the director of Greenpeace an opportunity.
Dumelang bagaetsho, leina la ka ke nna NG Molewadi, ke leloko la komiti e, mme ke a lo leboga.
Thank you, Jefferson. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Phindile Mola, a member of this portfolio committee. I thank you.
Good morning. I'm Jerome Mage, a member of this committee.
Well, is it morning or day? Good morning. My name is Philip Mchong, a member of the committee.
Thank you, Chair. Zakhele Mbele, member of the committee.
And Diane Kolobar, also member of the committee.
Thank you very much, sir. You're welcome to introduce yourself and welcome to Greenpeace.
Thank you for this opportunity. I am not the director of Greenpeace. I'm just a political advisor for the climate and energy campaign in Africa. My name is Happy Kambule, and thank you for this opportunity to present to you our submission. As you'll know, but if you don't know, Greenpeace is an environmental organization, and we're trying around the world to bring across at least stewardship of the environment and to reflect social justice in many of the debates that we have. Currently in Africa, we're focusing on food security, climate change, energy access, the oceans economy, as well as the forests. Essentially, the reason why we are here is because this bill has a lot of implications for the type of work that we do. We are an activist organization, so we do a lot of actions, we do a lot of demonstrations, we picket, we doi-doi, we do a lot of political action. So this has a lot of implications for the type of work that we do, as well as for our activists, including our partner organizations. And as part of our of the way in which we do our work, we take a lot of care in trying to reflect democratic principles, and we try to inspire and promote an open debate about environmental issues. And sometimes that puts us in a situation where we have to do investigative work. We need to take pictures, we need to take videos, we need to make to have interviews. And obviously, as I'm describing this, it's contrary to some of the provisions that are within the bill already, such as sharing information or having discussions with security personnel or taking pictures of critical infrastructure. As I said, that this has a lot of implications for the type of work that we do. But the values of Greenpeace essentially are to bear witness to environmental destruction and to confront it in a non-violent way. So our premise is that we do not do anything that is violent, although we are confrontational. The basis of our work is civil disobedience. So at times we do acts that are, one could say, tantamount to trespass or small acts of entering without permission, so as to hang banners or to project images. Our general concerns of the bill are the same as those that Right to Know will speak about tomorrow. But we focused on the fact that this bill as it stands is a bit unconstitutional, and I say it's a bit because it's always open to interpretation until you take it to court and whatnot. But we feel that the Bill of Rights have been limited far more in this bill than they should be if they were just limited using Section 36. And we feel that some of the ways in which the bill restricts some of these Bill of Rights, such as that to assemble, is unnecessarily restrictive and disproportionate. We are also concerned that the bill shifts away from the core principles of the Constitution and is based towards restriction of repression of dissent, as well as it also places a high weight on national security. Some of the other concerns that we have, which are specific to the bill, is that the bill's definitions are vague and wide, for example, of a threat. This means that nuances are lost in the process, and there isn't a determination of what a threat is outside of when it is stated within the bill. We understand that there will be regulations that will be released after, but we do believe that those regulations will be far more procedural than they are substantive. And the other part of this is that there is a large degree within the bill of perceived harm or perceived damage, whereas there isn't a notion of actual damage or actual harm that is there. So it is open to discretion of whoever might be the security manager, because conditions are also placed by the security manager as opposed to being placed by the council within a critical infrastructure. The impact of the bill will also discourage legitimate expression of rights, and in some cases we do believe that something like a national key point, including a critical infrastructure, could be used to shield public officials and institutions from legitimate public scrutiny. For example, some of the work that we do looks at air quality. If we were to have this kind of bill, we wouldn't be able to get data on what air quality measurements are being taken, including who is taking them in areas such as Sasolburg and etc., since information will be restricted. In the principal
concern, can I just stop there?
Yes.
Sorry to interrupt. We're going to take at this stage a 10-minute break, and then we come back and then you continue with the principal concepts. 10-minute break. Thank you, members.
Thank you.